If I die, just pray that I die bravely.
You'll not die. You'll not have to fight him. Griswold dies as he drinks the toast.
What?
Listen, I have put a pellet of poison in one of the vessels.
Which one?
The one with the figure of a pestle.
The vessel with the pestle?
Yes, but you don't want the vessel with the pestle. You want the chalice from the palace.
I don't want the vessel with the pestle. I want the chalice from the what?
The chalice from the palace.
Hmm?
It's a little crystal chalice with the figure of a palace.
Does the chalice from the palace have the pellet with the poison?
No, the pellet with the poison's in the vessel with the pestle.
Oh, the pestle with the vessel.
The vessel with the pestle.
What about the palace from the chalice?
Not the palace from the chalice. The chalice from the palace.
Where's the pellet with the poison?
In the vessel with the pestle.
Don't you see? The pellet with the poison's in the vessel with the pestle.
The chalice from the palace has the brew of it. It's true.
So easy. I can say it.
Well, then you fight him.
Listen carefully. The pellet with the poison's in the vessel with the pestle. The chalice from the palace has the brew that is true.
Or the pellet with the poison's in the vessel with the pestle. The chalice from the palace has the brew that is true.
Good man.
Just remember that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Stuff We've Seen. This is Jim. And now, the original cannibalistic humanoid, underground dweller himself, Teal.
Can I laugh now?
Now I'm going to have to cut that out. Yes, chuckle away there, funny man.
Oh, yeah. So, Chud, I saw that movie at least a dozen times on VHS. I loved it.
I saw it in the theater opening weekend.
I know,
that's
I'm
how
jealous.
Much of a geek I'm at.
I'm so jealous. Yeah, what a great 80s, I don't know what it is, grunge horror movie almost. It's like a B-minus movie, but that is somehow so fun and ridiculous and stupid that it's lovable all the same.
And it's got Daniel Stern in it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it actually since the 80s, but I did watch it a lot.
Not either. But let's just say, kids in the listening audience, this movie might come into play a little bit later on in the program. Should I tell them what we have in store for them?
Yeah. Well, line it up.
Okay, kids, this is what you're about to win. You are going to win a dream date with Teal, the man himself, and his great pal and listener of the show, Will, who might be with us today. After we drive him a little batty and discover what is it to be a millennial. That's right, we have one of those rare creatures on the program today. We were going to dive into a brand new movie that's kind of got a little bit of a sensation power. A lot of people are talking about it. It's that Jordan Peele laugh riot, Us.
It is Laugh Riot, isn't it?
Okay. Maybe. We don't know yet. We haven't discussed.
Maybe it is. We have not discussed yet, but we will be discussing Us, the film, Us.
Not yet. Not you and
but
I.
Before we go down this rabbit hole, let's welcome Will. Are you there, Will?
It is me. I am here.
Welcome. Will is a longtime listener, first-time caller, as they say.
In the radio biz, as it
were. In the radio biz. Will comes to us with some experience in the radio biz. I believe that you teach English?
I do. Yeah, I teach sophomores, juniors, and seniors in Western Maine.
And I believe you probably incorporate some film stuff into your classes.
I wish I did more of it. At my previous teaching job, I actually did teach a film studies elective my second year there. And that was actually pretty successful, and I had quite a spread. I got away with some films that maybe I shouldn't have shown some students. But
give us an example.
But that's what permission slips are for.
Henry and June.
I think the most risque film that I showed.
Man Bites Dog.
Unforgiven.
what? That's risque?
Risque only in the sense that, you know, there's sex in the
first. Right. Well, and you do have to get permission slips in high school to show something R-rated.
Well, this was high school.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking college for a second. I was all confused. If you had to get permission slips from college, who are you getting it from? The roommates?
I know, really. No, that's a pipe dream, unfortunately. But
you're kind of a horror guy, right? You like horror flicks.
Very much so. Yeah. Horror is definitely my genre, between horror and westerns mostly.
Okay.
But I watch most things.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, Will, was there, because I have sort of a formative experience with a horror movie, was there, I'm assuming you didn't watch horror movies as a very little kid. Maybe you did. Was there one that, like, you snuck and saw by accident that freaked you out or something like that?
I remember I was definitely younger than five. I had been sort of sheltered away back into my bedroom with my sister and my mother, and my dad was out in the living room watching the movie Species.
Okay, yeah.
And I actually went and...
Is that Natasha Henstridge?
Yes.
And I actually went into the living room kind of by accident, and I saw there was, like, this famous scene where I think they're, like, on a train or something, and, like, the creature is, like, spread out over a wall, and it, like, eats a dude. and it's just, it's kind of, you know, it's obviously super graphic, and my mother was really mad at me for having, like, gone out and done that.
Oh, right.
And then the best thing, though, was that she was actually more mad at my father than she was mad at me. So even after that, my dad and I used to go to the movies almost every weekend, and he did not have, like, a filter for me. And we could just go see whatever we wanted, because, you know, even if it's R-rated, hey, I'm gonna bring my kid.
Right. And did he like horror flicks too?
It's true. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Well, did he like them, or did he like that you liked them, so he wanted to go and do something with you? Because that's the way it was with my dad. I don't think he really liked the horror movies, but he enjoyed the fact that I did.
No, in this case, it was really like he saw a film, like, trailer or something on TV, and immediately was like, I think we'll go see that this weekend. I think one of my favorite examples of that is we went and saw like films like Anaconda.
Yes.
And Lake Placid, you know, classic kind of creature features of the late 90s.
Let's not call them classics. Maybe in, you know, 20 years ago for you, these are classics.
Classics.
Texas Chainsaw and The Exorcist.
They're classics if you're a millennial.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I throw the term classic around. Just
we could have a new, like, you know, reoccurring segment with you. We'll call it Millennial Classics with Will.
I would be a huge proponent of that.
Well, so Will, you're into horror, and you know you got your Anaconda and your Lake Placid and
classics.
You want to go a level deeper. Do you go and search out some of the older films, like, or literally is your horror knowledge from literally a 20-year span?
Oh no,
I'm not making a joke. I'm curious.
Oh, I know.
I don't know what is if he's
no. That's a fair point. You guys had an episode from a few weeks ago where you're talking about, I think you were talking about Joe Dante.
Yeah.
Yes.
In his heyday. One other sort of formative film that established my liking of the genre was The Howling.
Oh, yes.
Now that's a great one. I think between that, you know, I've seen classic Universal monster films, Wolfman, Creature from the Black Lagoon, things like that, like dating back that far. But I think, given my age, let's say, I have not gone and been able to see maybe as many of horror films going back that far. But
I remember this past October we decided to watch The Omen, right? My oldest is getting into horror films, so we thought we'd introduce him to the classics. And you know, The Omen is pretty stodgy. And
yes, it is.
He was really underwhelmed, kind of like, this is it? This is what you consider horror? Come on, people. And this kid's only 10 and a half. You know?
At best, it's suspense.
At best,
I did introduce my wife, yeah, about a year ago. We watched the It TV movie, the little miniseries that aired. It just before we went and saw the sort of new imagining of it. And it had been a while since then I hadn't even seen it. And I would say it has not aged well.
I don't think it aged well when it showed. It was
no, that's true.
You know, but what did you think of the new It?
I thought it was great.
Okay.
I'm not saying any more.
I might, I don't know, maybe I found it, maybe it's obviously to be a bit more palatable, but I can say I'm excited for, you know, new...
It 2?
Adaptations, yeah, plus the sequel.
What about Hereditary? Did you see that?
Okay, so let me start this.
Have you heard our episode on Hereditary?
Yeah, so that's what I was saying. So let me start by saying this.
There's no wrong answer unless it's not the right one.
And I was just talking to somebody else about Hereditary today, and I, you know, I don't begrudge them their joys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just if you're going around saying that Hereditary is going to be the best film of horror in the next 100 years, we may have a few words to say.
No. I would never say that. I would say that I certainly disagree with maybe Teal's assessment a little bit.
What?
I loved Hereditary. I went and saw it in the theater.
Well, that's interesting. We didn't see it in the theater, and I do feel like it might have been a better experience.
Yeah, there's something about the atmosphere that movie promoted in the theater that was certainly more chilling than seeing it, like, on, you know, when it comes out on Blu-ray or whatever.
I can see that.
It actually reminded me of another film that had come out the year previous, which was The Witch.
Yes.
Yes, except for The Witch was a really great movie, and Hereditary was so-so.
Okay, fair.
I felt like Hereditary shot itself in the foot a lot, and it could have been great, but it stumbled over itself, whereas The Witch just is great.
You did see The Witch? We never talked about that, Teal.
Yeah, we'll talk about it at some point.
It's a good movie.
Yes.
It's a very slow-build horror film that's not really, you know, it's more about, I don't know how to even describe that film.
It's about atmosphere.
Yeah, I really like that. And I think that's where, for us, some of the best horror movies are really more about atmosphere, like The Babadook. That was scary and atmospheric. And that's why I think it's really one of the better ones of the last maybe 20 years.
Yeah. Every single year, right around Halloween, a bunch of friends from college, we all get together and do like a, you know, an annual horror movie night. It's always a smattering of like good films versus so-so films and even...
Well, so-so films have their charms, though.
It's true, yeah. You know, we watch things like The Woman in Black. There's a Daniel Radcliffe film.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Is that would we consider that a horror film? That's like a ghost story that's not really scary, but it's weird. It's like a subgenre of the horror.
I didn't love it.
But yet you guys get together and watch it.
It's true, yeah. We actually, in past year, we got together and we watched, that was when we watched Mandy for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And I was the only person in the entire room who actually enjoyed it.
I mean, you would think that everybody would be like going, yeah.
I know, that's what I wanted too.
Yeah.
And that was also when we watched Hereditary, and that was, I think, my third time seeing it. But yeah, so that's what we watched this past year anyway. And other, you know, we've watched other things like Cannibal Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
We watched, let's see here, Martyrs. That's an interesting one.
I haven't seen, what if, Teal, you said that it's one of those that's so disgusting and gross that you can't watch it or something?
Yes, and I won't recommend it to people. Yeah, I haven't watched it. It's, I watched a few minutes of it.
I haven't seen it.
But it's a French, essentially torture porn kind of film.
Kind of like those hostel movies.
Yeah, it's probably better than that.
For some reason, those kind of films, I don't even consider them horror. It is, it's torture porn, and I find it very hard to watch. And I didn't see the first movie, Hostel, when it came out, but when the second one came out.
So, Will, let me ask you this.
I
thought you were done.
Hostel story. No, I said when the second one came out, I had a friend
who
forced me to go with him to see Hostel, and I didn't want to because I don't like those types of movies, and I felt very uncomfortable watching that entire thing. That was my story, mister.
Yeah, how do you feel about the Saw movies?
I've never seen them.
Oh, you haven't seen them?
I've never seen them. Those are not kind of movies that I want to watch. That's not my kind of horror, so I have not seen a single Saw movie.
So, Will, this is...
I will unashamedly say that I have seen every single one.
Well, but that's your... But that is your... You know, you grew up with those Saw movies.
That's fair. Yeah. Although I will...
Classics.
Yeah, clearly.
Right. They're millennial classics with Will.
I will say, though, that the first one is the only one worth watching.
I would say that only half of the first one is worth watching.
Also fair.
Everything in the room is worth watching. Cut out the Danny Glover storyline entirely.
I think you'd have to wrap me up in bandages and keep my eyelids open with the Ludovico technique and make me watch those movies because I'm just not going to watch them.
Okay, well, let me ask you. I was thinking about this today. What are movies that get under your skin and creep you out and sort of break through your tolerances?
In terms of films that, like, really have kind of irked me, man.
I'll tell you what. You go see, you rent, or when Criterion comes on, and you get that service, you watch In the Realm of the Senses, and then you come back and we'll talk.
Oh, yikes. Yeah, I've actually watched maybe the first 10 minutes of that movie.
Well, then you haven't seen it, because man,
no, then I haven't, no. In terms of things that kind of irked me and really kind of piqued my interest in the genre as well, one film that it never ceases to amaze me, not so much that, like, it scares me, but I'm always kind of sobered by it, is like Silence of the Lambs.
Yes. That's a good pick.
The last film that actually jumped me, and it wasn't even, again, not a scary film,
right,
was Shutter Island.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And the only reason I jumped was because you have that scene kind of towards the end where DiCaprio's character is holding his wife and he's just kind of sobbing into her shoulder. And suddenly you just hear the gunshot. And I was not anticipating that.
Yeah, I was trying to think about films that sort of actually do scare me. And David Lynch kept coming up. And Lost Highway got...
Lost Highway has a few moments in there that are just so creepy.
Yeah. And it really gets under my... Like, that's the kind of stuff, more than gore or monsters or torture porn or those sorts of things, the stuff that really freaks me out is that sort of weird, ominous, creepy David Lynch thing.
See how quiet Will got? I'm guessing he has not seen very many David Lynch movies.
I love Blue Velvet.
Go on.
I
I'm listening.
Mulholland Drive. Have you seen Mulholland Drive?
I have seen Mulholland Drive exactly once. I've seen Eraserhead once, and, oh, God, there's another one that's
Inland
totally...
Inland Empire?
Nope, that's not one.
Lost Highway?
Also not one.
The Straight Story?
That's about a guy riding a lawnmower.
So, Teal, do you have any more questions for our young
no,
fellow?
No, I'm good. I'm ready I'm ready to talk about us.
Well, I think, yeah, now we've kind of... We got our, you know, a little... Our feet wet on the history of Will and some of his likes. And we know that he is a fan of horror. And the director of Get Out, Jordan Peele, he's got his follow-up film, and it's Us. And we kind of thought it'd be fun for each of us to go see it so that we could discuss it while it's still out in theaters.
Yeah, we have not discussed this in advance at all. I have no idea what you guys thought of this movie.
No, we've kind of discussed around it.
Yeah, like, we have discussed around it a little bit, yeah, but I don't
just
know.
Asked some questions based on like some things that we, some points in the movie, just to get our story straight. But
right, and I think we are going to bump into some spoilers here. So if you're listening and you haven't seen the film, I've got to say I went into this film pretty blind, as I tend to do. I didn't even know this film existed until 2 weeks ago when Jim suggested this episode. I hadn't seen any trailers or read anything about it. I knew that it was Jordan Peele's new film and that it was a horror film, and that is all I knew.
And I obviously knew a little bit more than Teal did. I still didn't try to find out too much, but typically a movie like this is a movie that I'd want to see, but I just don't end up getting out to see and have to wait till it comes streaming somewhere like 6 or so months down the road. So it's kind of fun to get a chance to watch this kind of movie that everyone, you know, there's a lot of people talking about it.
Yeah, it's really catching on.
And so anytime, whether or not, like, I'll even like the movie, if a movie's being discussed a lot and, like, kind of deeper themes, et cetera, I'm in because I want to find out, well, what is it about this particular movie that is getting people talking?
And so you went and saw it, Will, on opening day, huh? And you did not find it scary, apparently.
I think it's more, obviously, more heavily reliant on, you know, building that sense of sort of dread and suspense more so than, say, you know, boogeyman jumping out of a closet kind of thing.
Although there's plenty of those kinds of moments.
And there are plenty, yes. But me personally, again, speaking to that sort of high tolerance, I I walked away from that film being like, yeah, that was scary, but I was not scared.
Here's my experience of going to see this movie. I saw it at a weekday matinee, and I was the only person in the theater. And which is, not a strange experience for me because it was a lot of my childhood. But I think a movie like this really benefits from a crowd. I think this movie is a crowd pleaser. It has a lot of really engaging moments. The second act is basically an extended home invasion sequence that is pretty intense and has lots of action and scares and violence and some pretty interesting character moments too.
Harking back to previous episodes, it also is related to one of those things that you hate, which is uninvited house guests.
I hate uninvited house guests, and even worse when it's somebody just like you.
So wait, are you suggesting a double feature with this film and Mother?
Oh my God, that'd be wonderful.
Mother did get under my skin. That's one that creeped me out. Okay, so I'll just tell you my experience of this movie a little bit. So in the first 10 minutes, I thought, this is pretty creepy. It's got me. This is interesting. The whole opening 1986 sequence I thought was great. I'm totally into it. And then when the home invasion stuff started going on, I was like, oh, it's a home invasion movie. And then I started thinking about it. Because I thought, wow, this concept is interesting. It's a setup. I wonder where it's going to go. How is this all going to pay off? And then it does all add up, or at least it's all explained. But by the end of the movie, I was kind of like, I guess I was entertained, but I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to take from this. And I guess this is sort of a common reaction. It's open to interpretation. There's some ambiguity, things like that. But it felt like it was trying to do more than just be a horror movie. By the end of it, it felt like it was trying to do more than just scare us. But I wasn't sure what it was trying to do. Because I wasn't scared by the end, by the very end. There's the twist, and then there's the very end, sort of the final aerial shot. And the twist I figured out in the first 10 minutes, that's easy. It's like, it's a gimme with the concept, basically.
What about you, Will? Was that anything kind of a surprise, or did you see that coming a mile away?
I've had some discussions with other, with other people about this film, obviously, before today, and it has been, kind of a mixed bag, which has surprised me. Simply, there is obviously the predictability factor with this film. The female protagonist is a young girl, is, watching TV. I was not at all focused on the TV. I was focused on what was on the shelves around the TV, hence why you saw, the spines of books and film, like Chud and, The Man with Two Brains and, you've got the boy who's got the Jaws t-shirt. Knowing all of those key kind of, seemingly cursory details of what's, the mise-en-scene that's, what is around the shot that actually kind of is going to inform us of what we're about to watch. And I agree with you, Teal, where you say, 10 minutes in, you're like, yeah, I have a feel for what this movie is about to give me, but I'm still in it.
Yeah, I was along for the ride, but I felt like it didn't hold up as well once I started thinking about it. Like, on a visceral level, the actors are really enjoyable. The humor is enjoyable. Some of the horror/action sequences are really well executed on a technical level. The direction is really good at times. And I was engaged in it, but... Okay, here's my big issue with the movie. I'll just get this out of the way. When she goes down underneath at the end and meets Red, and Red explains what's going on, I feel like the explanation should not have been in the movie. Because what it did was give a scientific/practical explanation to something that can't hold up in the real world. And so it just creates more problems by trying to say that it's real. But by trying to say it's real, it sort of collapses the whole metaphor or allegory that it's trying to build. And as a result, it sort of fails as allegory. Again, I'd be willing to forgive that if the end had some sort of emotional impact or made me say, whoa, oh, I got to reconsider this, or I see this differently. But the very end, that last aerial shot had no impact on me. I just kind of, okay, I guess that's what happened.
I'm going to jump in now.
Good, finally.
I've just been waiting for you guys to kind of just get it all out there, and then I'm going to go to town because you just mentioned some things. And something that I hadn't thought of, so I thought was interesting. First of all, I don't find horror movies in general scary. I'm not going in thinking, oh, I hope this film scares me. My wife's a little different. She accompanied me. She actually likes to be scared. She likes to put herself in that environment to like let her defenses down and find something scary. She found a couple of moments of the movie scary, but she didn't overall find this particular film scary. That doesn't mean, see, to me, horror movie is a genre, and that doesn't have to equate scares necessarily. It's about mood, it's about thrills, it's about all these other things. And so just that note, I walked out of the movie saying, yeah, you know, it was good, but I kind of felt the same way as I did with Get Out. You know, I thought I saw it much later. I didn't find it really was as deep as people were trying to make it. But now that I see two films from Jordan Peele, here's what I kind of take away from it, is that he clearly is a guy who has film knowledge. He knows how to kind of put scenes together, and he's really thought through a lot of things, and that's exciting. And he's doing something that I think maybe it's not even on purpose, but he is somehow able to fashion a film, and he's carefully laid in enough subtext that he's getting people to talk about something that's deeper than the movie, whether or not any evidence of that is really in the film. Somehow he's like this, he's like almost like the kid making the magic trick. He is tricking people into thinking that the movie is more than it really is, and he's now having people dive into these awesome discussions, and that in itself says there's something going on with the way he makes movies.
But what are those discussions? I spent some time on the internet trying to find them, and there's a lot of discussions about how there's all these clues.
All right, I'm going to give you an example here. I'm going to throw out a discussion, right? But I'm going to finish it, all right? So you're going to hear me. This is exactly what I think is happening.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right, the opening of the film takes place in 1986, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So they're down on the beach, and they're in Santa Cruz, California. Okay. Now, he lays in an Easter egg here, which I caught right away, but I thought was really cool. As soon as you're on Santa Cruz, I was like, oh, 1986. That's exactly the same beach that they shot Lost Boys on.
Right.
And I think that's pretty cool. And they even referenced that, hey, I think that they may need extras. They're shooting over there.
They're shooting over there, yeah.
So it was taking place. So 1 year later, in 1987, two things happen. The end of July, Lost Boys comes out. About a week later, the FCC repeals the fairness doctrine. And at that key moment, nothing in America has been the same. Okay? So you had a world that was all seemingly normal, and it went way off the rails, and here we are 30 years later. This is us, you see? And this is the point he's trying to make. Now, I just made that point, and I mixed in some real things that were in the film.
Right.
However, this fairness doctrine thing is also true, but this theory is just something that I just pulled out of my ass. It isn't real. It's not something that he was making a point. But see, he's laying in these things that you can pretty much then go, yes, I get it. The film is an allegory about us and the way we are and how we cannibalize ourselves and how we have two duels. Some of us are underground wanting to come up, and the other half is filled with excess and just being into ourselves. And see, there's all this stuff that's really, you know, it's there for interpretation.
It's there for interpretation, but I feel like that speech undermined how it could have gone in terms of interpretation.
Well, see, what you're saying is it turns into almost like a sci-fi movie,
yeah,
which on the one hand is cool, right? And so as you're trying to figure out the plot, you're like, like you said, he's laying in everything so it can have this like nice, tight look at how cleverly I put all these things together. But then you're walking out of the film with a million questions like, where did they get the scissors? Like, are they making those scissors down
and
there?
Even if I'm willing to let all of that stuff go and just say, okay, it totally exists in the realm of allegory, I still have no idea what the allegory is. I went through all of the things you said. None of them actually really hold up. The problem is none of them had any impact on me. There's a bunch of stuff. There's a bunch of symbols floating around and clues and things connected, and it's all really layered in. But the fact of the matter is it doesn't actually add up to that much.
But I think this is where he's having fun with audience expectations, right? So he's taken the horror genre.
Well, then it's sort of like Lost.
Well, okay, you may be a little bit. But I think this guy's saying, you know, yeah, it's on one level, I'm giving you the horror flick. I'm giving you all these like little clever things. I gave you that ending where she looks back at the sun and all that stuff. And I actually think that it might have been better had the reveal come while she was down there battling Red, and then you learned what was happening. Because instead, you said this offline to me, it became like Alien Covenant,
which yes.
is... As you know, I hated that plot development.
But it was basically the same ending as Alien Covenant.
Yeah, so I mean, so again, I think what he's saying is, yeah, you know what, when you're dealing with horror or anything, there's nothing necessarily original, but I'm going to put together a lot of things in a lot of ways and have fun. And I think that there's that first level is all you need, is sort of you go in and you have a good time. And what I liked, and you know, sometimes my wife helps me out with this part, and she like, what she thinks is different, is for years... And when the entire history of film, we've had these stories, and they're always told by predominantly white males. White males writing them, white males directing them. And now we have a guy who's come along in two films. He's giving us, you know, basically the same story, but it's told from a very different perspective. And one that maybe even, there might be layers that we don't get as a white male. Who knows? But what is exciting is he is... got maybe just a slightly different point of view.
Yeah.
He's a voice now that just like the movie in a weird way reminded me of Sorry to Bother You, in that he's kind of creating and inventing his own little mythologies. And, you know, I found that interesting. It was almost enough to sort of make me say, even though it wasn't my favorite movie, those kind of things I liked about it. I liked the fact that, hey, this is a black family. And guess what? They have the secondary white family character friends. And
right.
You know what? They're the ones that are going to get picked off like so many like side characters do, who if the black person got to be in the film, they were the side character that got kicked off. Like, he's taking these cliches and he's showing them in a different way.
He's twisting them. He's playing with them. He's doing really interesting stuff with race and
the
class.
Stuff, that's the stuff I like about it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily when we start to kind of go, well, how the hell did this science experiment even work?
Once you think about it too much, it starts to fall apart. And so the question is, on a sort of visceral level, does it have an impact? Does it make you feel something more than just some frights and chuckles?
It didn't for me.
Yeah, me neither.
But I mean, I enjoyed moments that, like, there's moments where characters in these situations usually do really stupid things. And I thought in this movie, some of the characters do smart things. And
yes, they absolutely do.
The way that the husband behaved was great. Where they're all in the car, and then his wife gets out of the car, and he says almost like something that I feel like you would say, where he's like, where are you getting out of the car? Well, and mom is out of the car. Like, I laughed out loud because I just thought that was great. And I think that's where, you know, Jordan Peele adds these levels of humor that aren't your just standard, like, here, I want to make the audience laugh. Like, he just does.
Well, they're not jokes.
That are very
funny. It's real humor based in the characters. And he really does have a great touch with making these people feel human and feel real and attaching us to them. And, you know, I cared about what happened to them over the course of the film.
Yeah. Now, what about you, Will? Are you taking this in? What are your thoughts?
This has kind of been stewing in the back of my mind since I've watched it. Because you were talking about, you know, how, you know, you're not taking anything away from it. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. What I'm finding is that the message is more about maybe acknowledgement of our current circumstances. And like the sort of the social commentary that comes with this film has been something that I've been thinking about a lot.
Oh, I see where you're going. Yeah. And I did read an article about this, casting it in terms of contemporary politics and how what has risen up, hatred has risen up to bind us together.
Obviously, there's a certain level of irony there in the sort of the Hands Across America sort of
yes.
protests that we see right from the get-go.
People can make this movie into whatever they want and a political statement, but I think to Teal's point is that once it starts explaining itself, right, it you start to think about what it's telling you, like why these people are down there, and it just really doesn't make a lot of sense. So I'm not sure. I mean, again, people can attach whatever meaning they want to the symbolism, if there is any, but I think it's just, it's flugity fluff.
Well, and the movie isn't saying take this as symbolism. Like when she went down under there, basically from that moment, I felt like there shouldn't have been any dialogue down there. And it should have just been this experience. It's sort of like the last 10 minutes of 10 or 15 minutes of 2001. Right. Imagine if that had had dialogue explaining to us, well, he's been captured by aliens and this is covering and now we're watching him age over the. I mean, what?
I mean, that's the best part about a movie like 2001. Of course, I'm not putting us into that category, but I think what Utile is saying is that there is what a master is. We're still 50 years in. We're talking about that ending, and it still confuses people. It inspires people, and it's still up for various interpretations because of the way Kubrick said, I'm not going to tell you what's in my head. You're going to have to figure it out.
Exactly. And Us tells you what's in its head. And what's in its head doesn't make any sense. There is something emotionally in this film that sort of is sort of tied in with what we're undergoing as a country right now and the mood in the country and the divisiveness in the country. You know, we really are seeing the country as these two halves.
Well, it's the idea that we're tearing us apart.
Yes.
We are tethered together, and yet we, you know.
Yes.
But I think that in a deeper level, it really doesn't matter whether or not we think that there is any symbolism or subtext or what have you. The fact is that this film has been unleashed, and it has gotten people to discuss a movie, right? So I feel like that gets you extra points, the fact that people are now going, wait, maybe I got to go see this thing in the theater.
Yes.
And that's, to me, what's really great. And you can't just not give Jordan Peele that credit, you know?
He has... Oh, no. I think this is a really successful movie in a lot of ways. I feel like it just doesn't quite achieve the greatness it could have.
Like I said, I feel like it's just like the kid and his magic tricks. There's a lot of smoke and mirrors going on here.
Yeah.
The idea is that it's tricking you into thinking it's more profound than it really is.
Exactly.
It's a very simple movie, but it's craftily well done. And I mean, my faults, right, were just more from he was so clever with his Easter eggs that if you were a really good film historian, it kind of spoils it from the get-go. Because as soon as I saw that chud, right?
Well, and the thing about the tunnels at the beginning, I mean, it was all...
That he put that up there, right, is almost like to set that up. But I'm like...
He should not have put that up.
I'm like, chud and the tunnels, that's going to play into things. And then as soon as that opening thing happened in the, you know, the fun house... And the way he shot that, and
yeah.
I was like, oh, should she silent afterwards? I'm like, clearly.
Clearly.
There was a switch that took place.
It's the old doppelganger switcheroo.
Yeah, you know the old doppelganger switcheroo right there, Will Boy? You old doppelganger, you.
The look on Jason's face at the end of the movie tells you everything.
Yeah. My favorite scene in the movie is the two kids in the closet. And when they're playing with the matches and the magic trick and he pulls the mask up, it was, I wanted to see more of that kind of thing in the movie because I thought that scene was actually kind of creepy.
Yeah, I mean, individually, there's a lot. I mean, he's layered that film with lots of fun homages to other things. I mean, like there's the golf clubs. It's like very reminiscent of Funny Games. There's that scene with the Beach Boys song that turns into the
NWA song.
And it reminds me of Clockwork Orange again.
Yeah.
And there's also a little homage to I Spit on Your Grave with the outboard motor in the water. That's also a scene that's taken from something else. So, I mean, again, he's layering this with another layer of fun for people to watch if they
Yeah, this histories. Is a, it's a, it's a film geek fantasy, this movie.
Yeah, I mean, so how will it hold up in a few years? I don't know. But I think what he's done is, if you think about some of the crap horror movies that they just, those PG-13s that they throw out to get the kids to go opening weekend. You know, just this year alone, I feel like there's been an interesting throwback to the type of movie-going experience I'd have as a kid in the winters where you weren't with the big box office films and they would dump all these horror movies in and it was always like February and March. And
right.
Already we've had Happy Death Day to You, which I saw the first one and I'd like to see the second, especially when it comes on cable. But that's like that reminds me of those sort of like fun 80s little schlock horror things.
Right.
There was Greta, which looked totally campy. but I didn't get a chance to see it.
Did you see it, Will?
That was one I actively avoided.
What? But it's Neil Jordan, and it's Isabelle Huppert or whatever, and Chloe Grace Moritz. I mean, that movie looked awesome. Looked like a bag of super fun camp. So shame on you, and we're going to see it when it comes on video, and we're going to
And we're going to make you watch it.
And then we've got now the Jordan Peele Us and coming out in a few weeks or whatever is the Curse of La Ronda.
That actually made me jump in the trailer.
Yeah. No, I mean, it kind of looks, you know, so I mean, I feel like, wow, we're getting this whole like winter of these throwback horror movies and I kind of like it.
It is kind of fun.
People really enjoy right now in, you know, I would say as of maybe in the last 5 years is that people love nostalgia.
Right.
And this movie gives them that. Speaking as somebody who has, you know, watches most of the sort of blockbuster films that, you know, when obviously we're not going to talk about Marvel films here, but
it's Marvel.
Yes, it is Marvel. when we, you know, when we look at the more recent Star Wars films, that's exactly what they kind of sucker you in with.
It's too bad they didn't have the nostalgia of making them good like the old ones.
Well, but that's what's interesting about Us is that it takes place now, but it's a throwback kind of in its type of movie and its influences. It made me think of about 100 other home invasion movies that I've sat through, but Funny Games is at the top of that list.
Yeah, that's actually my uncomfortableness. Like, I saw that, the American one that Michael Haneke did, and it was very hard for me to sit through. That's very tough. And my wife assures me that the original version is much better. But
yeah.
I said, I don't need to rewatch that in any language.
Right. Yeah. That's the kind of movie that gets to me. Okay. I have a hidden gem home invasion flick.
Okay, because then that'll probably be it.
Yeah, and that'll be sort of, we'll see if Will has seen this film. I don't know how I stumbled across this movie, but I watched it about a year ago. It's called Better Watch Out. This is a recent film. I think it's from 2017. And it's about a teenage girl who's babysitting for a 12-year-old boy and his friend. And
is it rated R?
I believe so.
Okay, so say this one more time. Now you got my interest.
Yeah, and it takes place at Christmas time, and I don't want to tell you too much because it's got...
Better Watch Out, correct?
Yeah, Better Watch Out.
All right, because now I got to go, like, after this is over...
From 2016.
I got to go downstairs and see if it's available because this sounds exactly like the kind of movie that my wife wants to watch.
Oh, she will love this.
All right, Better Watch Out.
Yep, Better Watch Out. It's a hidden gem. It's not super highly rated, but... Man, for a little B horror movie, home invasion movie, this is a treat.
Okay, I'm in. So you didn't even have to say, you didn't have to give away the plot. As soon as I thought for a minute there you were going to say the hidden gem was Don't Breathe, which you would email me about. And I'm like, come on, that movie had some moments, but I just hated the way it kind of, after the first half, it just went down the wrong tubes. But
yeah.
I do want to see this film. This sounds really good. Now, Will, here's a question. Do you subscribe to the streaming services?
Yeah, I just have Netflix and I have Amazon.
So do you have a few extra bucks around that you could maybe subscribe to the Criterion Channel, which is coming out April 8th?
Yes, I think I'm actually planning
to do
that.
Do that because they're going to have lots of these. Your film education really begins when that channel launches.
Yeah, you'll dig it. I think we should have a regular feature called Movies We Recommend to Will.
Yes, and he can come on with his millennial classics, and he can tell us a movie that he thinks is a classic, and we can laugh about it, you know?
Exactly.
I would love to come back and talk Tarantino when Once Upon a Time in Hollywood comes out.
So you want to be in for the Tarantino episode?
I would love that.
Okay, it'll be our foot fetish spectacular. but anyways, you know, I'm a big Tarantino. Well, I don't know if I'm a fan of him, but I'm a fan of his movies. I think he's a craftsman, and I think Teal actually told me this, but I watched that trailer for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood at least 12 times.
Yeah, and I haven't seen it, and I won't be seeing it.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, if we didn't have this show and we just mentioned it, he probably wouldn't even know that there's a movie that Tarantino's making called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
No, I wouldn't know until it was like a week after it was in theaters.
Yep. And meanwhile, maybe we should get Will, like, his Millennial Classics Corner. We can, like, kind of carve out a little space in the website for Will's.
Ooh, yeah, we can give you a little corner of the website.
I can carve that out for you.
Yeah, considering that we don't get to update that website nearly enough.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That would be awesome.
So anyways, that just reminds me, everybody, we have a website, stuffweseen.com. We got an Instagram. I think it's Stuff We've Seen Podcast or something. You can find it. And we have an Instagram. We have a Twitter. We have it all.
we are available on the interwebs.
That's right. You can find us, or we'll find you. Hey, as we wrap up, I just want to say a very special thanks to our guest, Millennial Will.
Millennial Will. You have a new nickname now.
Yep. So we have Bill from Queens. We have Millennial Will. We'll have others.
The Great
we'll
Kate.
Have names for them. We have the Great Kate.
Millennial.
Willennial.
Willennial. Okay. And if you disagree with us about us, please let us know.
I don't know. Is there anything to disagree? We didn't hate it. We didn't like it. We thought it was...
For the record, I loved it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, Will loved it.
Well, Will, why didn't you say you loved it? That's the whole thing. We were waiting for you to say you loved it so that we could trap you and then go, it sucked. But it didn't really suck. Well, my wife loved it too. And she said, you better tell people that I loved it because I don't want to hear anything bad about it when she listens to the show back or I'm going to be in trouble.
Well, I recommend the movie. I think it's great fun.
I would say in true Facebook millennial fashion, because I posted about Bird Box on Facebook, I said that if you don't like us, then you can get out.
Ooh.
Very funny. All right. Well, on that note, I think we're going to say goodbye, kids.
Okay.
All right. Behalf of the entire staff of Stuff We've Seen, which is me and Teal, I bid you adieu.
Thanks, Will.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, and thanks again, everyone, for tuning in to Stuff We've Seen. On behalf of Teal and myself, I want to thank you for your listenership. Just a word of note as we finish up here, a very special thanks to Millennial Will. For those who may have thought that Will was a little quiet on the show, he had some mic difficulties that were only discovered in post. So we assure you he wasn't as shy as he might have seen on the episode. Our apologies, sometimes these things, don't work out. They're out of our hands. This is not an exact science, though I suppose people who, do this for a living have it all figured out. So we'll do better next time, okay? And anyways, tune in and find us on stuffweveseen.com or on Twitter or Instagram, and you can send your feedback to feedback@jimandteal.com. All right, stay safe, everyone. Goodbye.